Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, in the heart of San Diego's East County. Today, we open our show with the latest on efforts to assist Afghan refugees who are coming to San Diego County, many of them into El Cajon and East County, and what you can do to help. Then we'll tell you about new indoor masking recommendations as cases of the COVID-19 Delta variant surge across our region. California is facing a severe nursing shortage, with some hospitals reporting drops of up to 96% in nursing staffing due to mostly nurses getting burned out after an exhausting year of caring for COVID patients, and due to new state mandates for healthcare workers to be vaccinated. We'll have a special report from CalMatters. We'll also have the latest on students from the Cajon Valley Union School District and their families who've been trapped in Afghanistan after a Taliban takeover and the efforts to get them out. Hantavirus has been found in mice in the Mount Laguna area, and we'll have details on today's show. And then, from California News Service, learn why California is ground zero in the climate crisis following an alarming new international report. If you're a renter or a landlord in San Diego County, you'll want to stay tuned to hear about new county programs to assist you with impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. There is a new earthquake warning app that could help save lives. Learn more on today's show. And then, from Public News Service, we'll have national news stories, including U.S. drone strikes on ISIS-K forces in Afghanistan, hurricane damage in New Orleans, a voting rights push, and more. On Bookshelf, we'll be interviewing our very own Raina Menashe on her new paranormal suspense novel, The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake. And from California News Service, we'll have some information on proposed reforms for student loan repayments. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. The U.S. has now evacuated over 110,000 civilians from Afghanistan, of whom about 5,000 are Americans. The rest include foreign nationals and Afghan civilians, primarily those who helped the U.S. military and their families. Many of those are coming to San Diego, either as a temporary stop before settling in other parts of the United States or as a permanent home. Since San Diego has a substantial Afghan and Middle Eastern community, and many Afghan refugees have relatives in our region, including here in East County. On August 24th, Reverend Shane Harris with the People's Association of Justice Advocates held a press conference with Afghan leaders locally, calling on county supervisors to pass a resolution to welcome Afghan refugees and help aid agencies provide housing.
My office is proposing to San Diego County officials an earmarked plan that the county can take. The fact is that today, the County of San Diego, based upon our analysis and the work we've done on outreach, the County of San Diego does not have a strong, coordinated approach to the crisis that we are not only watching unfold across seas, but the crisis that we are going to see as the larger influxes potentially of Afghan refugees come into our county. Historically, our county has been a county that has taken a stance for immigrants and has taken a stance for refugees. But so far, I have not seen this county take a stance pertaining to Afghan refugees. Why is this important to me? Because I believe that those who have been there for us, we should be there for them. It is the right approach. It is the right thing to do. And it matters. It matters. So today, I am asking for San Diego County officials to do two things that I think would mean a lot. The two things I'm proposing today, I believe, will begin to address some of the crisis that we are seeing. The crisis that we are concerned about is that we are not prepared as a border county to not only welcome Afghan refugees, but to provide them a strong, coordinated wraparound approach. And this is why the leaders that I'm standing with today support the efforts that we are underway pushing.
Harris's plan would include housing and wraparound services. And for those questioning why we should help refugees, Reverend Harris had this to say.
It is our job as the United States of America to stand with those who have stood with us. And I'm sure the leaders standing with me today would agree that the Afghan community has stood with the United States. It is our duty to stand with the Afghan community. Finally, in closing, before I hand it off to the other speakers, there's a scripture in the Bible in Matthew chapter 2 that talks about Jesus being a refugee. For those who say, why would we take care of Afghan refugees? That's not our responsibility. I say to you, Jesus was a refugee. Jesus himself experienced what fleeing turmoil looks like. And therefore, we should not turn a blind eye to our Afghan brothers and sisters if we are the United States of America.
A local businessman who fled Afghanistan as a child also spoke movingly at the press conference about what it means for him to feel welcome here, and why he hopes the same will be done for those who are coming now after the Taliban has taken over Afghanistan in the wake of the U.S. troop pullout that was ordered by President Trump and honored by President Biden.
Tariq Kogadai is going to now speak in support of the proposal, and we'll talk about why this plan is important. Tariq?
Thank you, Shane. I appreciate that. Everything that you do for the community, as well as speaking out for the Afghan community. It is obviously very important to help some of the people out. I'm a San Diego myself and a local business owner. Anything we can do on our part to help embrace the people in this situation. But politics aside, we all know that these people are in desperate need of help. And I remember myself when I was a child back in 1982, fleeing the Russians from Afghanistan. And even as a six-year-old child, I remember how it felt. Looking back, we were fortunate enough to make it, but then looking back and looking at some of the folks that did not make it across the border, who knows what happened to them, where they are now. But then also remembering how it feels to be a refugee in a place where you're being welcomed with open arms and knowing that there's hope for, you know, anybody's future as well as survival. And that's pretty much what we're here for, is to help some of the people that are struggling for their lives and the future of the children. So anybody that can help out and accommodate this particular cause would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
As of our show taping deadline, supervisors have not taken action on the proposal put forth by Reverend Harris and the People's Association of Justice Advocates. But others locally are stepping forward to help, including El Cajon City Councilman Phil Ortiz, who posted on Facebook, "Does anyone know any families or groups helping families fleeing the Taliban and are coming to East County that need assistance? The San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce and its foundation are looking to assist," Councilman Ortiz said. He urges people to call, text, or direct message him or reply to his Facebook post. Last year, Ortiz led a successful drive to raise funds to help La Mesa merchants who suffered vandalism, looting, or burning of property during a riot, raising over $200,000. Now, in addition, a private Facebook group called Helping El Cajon Refugees is mobilizing community support to collect donations of everything from furniture to children's cribs, high chairs, and other household items for Afghan refugees, many of whom are being placed in East County communities such as Lemon Grove and El Cajon. Aid agencies such as the International Rescue Committee and Jewish Family Services are gearing up to help the new wave of Afghan refugees in San Diego County, and they're accepting donations of money and, in some cases, household goods, clothing, and people willing to open their homes to the refugees, though to date there are still not enough resources to fully handle the surge, especially the need for housing. Now, internationally, Airbnb has just announced that it will donate housing for 20,000 Afghan refugees around the world through donations from Airbnb owners. Airbnb's own foundation, and other donations that can be made to the Airbnb.org Refugee Fund. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Amid a sharp increase in COVID-19 cases due to the spread of the more contagious Delta variant of the virus, the County of San Diego Health and Human Services Agency is recommending all San Diegans wear facial coverings in indoor public settings. While vaccinated people are no longer required to wear a face covering in most settings, the California Department of Public Health is now recommending that all Californians, regardless of vaccination status, wear a mask in an indoor public setting. People who are immunocompromised or at increased risk for severe disease from COVID-19 should be particularly cautious, as well as people who share a household with someone who is immunocompromised at increased risk of severe disease, not fully vaccinated, or not yet eligible for vaccination. Indoor masking for vaccinated people is also supported by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to prevent the spread of the virus. The new guidance is in addition to state public health mandates requiring masks on public transit, in transportation hubs like airports, indoors in K-12 schools and child care centers, emergency shelters, cooling centers, healthcare settings, state and local correctional facilities and detention centers, homeless shelters, long-term care settings, and adult and senior care facilities. Additionally, masks are now required for unvaccinated individuals in indoor public settings and businesses, retail, restaurants, theaters, family entertainment centers, and state and local government offices serving the public. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, says if you are not fully vaccinated yet, I urge you to get your shot now so we can slow the spread of this more contagious strain of COVID-19. Free COVID-19 vaccines are widely available through doctors, pharmacies, community clinics, and county public health centers for people who do not have a medical provider. For a list of locations, visit coronavirus-sd.com/vaccine. To date, nearly 75% of all San Diego County residents aged 12 and older are now fully vaccinated. The U.S. military is now requiring that all military personnel get vaccinated. Vaccines are also required for California's public colleges and universities. A growing number of private employers are also mandating vaccines for workers. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
COVID-19 burnout is driving many nurses to quit, and hospital administrators say the state's new vaccine mandate is compounding that shortage, CalMatters reports. Around California and the nation, nurses are trading in high-pressure jobs for a career change, early retirement, or less demanding assignments, leading to staffing shortages in many hospitals. Hospitals are struggling to comply with the state's nurse staffing requirements as pandemic-induced burnout has exacerbated an already chronic nursing shortage nationwide. Some traveling nurses, who are in high demand nationwide, are turning down California assignments because they don't want to get vaccinated. Hospitals say they are reaching a crisis point, straining under the dual forces of more people seeking routine care and surging COVID-19 hospitalizations driven by the Delta variant. Dr. Tom Sugarman, an emergency physician in the East Bay, says there is not enough staff to keep beds open, and patients can languish waiting. Last week, Governor Gavin Newsom signed an executive order reinstating emergency provisions aimed at ensuring adequate staffing. In part, the order allows healthcare workers from out of state to work in California. Before the pandemic, nursing shortages were already common in most parts of the state, according to the Office of Statewide Health Planning and Development. But now the pandemic has stretched resources to a breaking point. Hospitals, some with more COVID-19 patients now than during the winter surge, say they are confronting unprecedented staffing shortages, especially among nurses. Lois Richardson, an attorney for the California Hospital Association, says all of our hospitals are saying staffing is a big problem. We have fewer personnel than at the beginning of the pandemic and more patients. The staffing shortage is so severe that Scripps Health in San Diego is considering temporarily consolidating some of its outpatient centers. Scripps, which has 5 hospitals and 28 outpatient clinics in the San Diego area, told CalMatters it's serving nearly 20% more patients on average than before the pandemic. At the same time, job openings at the hospitals have increased 57% since August 2019, and for nursing jobs alone, vacancies have increased 96%. Eric Cole, Corporate Senior Vice President of Human Resources for Scripps, says we've had some staff leave the organization or leave the industry as a whole because they're burned out. They'll wake up in the morning and call off the shift. They've done as much as they can do. All of our hospitals are saying staffing is a big problem, he adds. We have fewer personnel than at the beginning of the pandemic and more patients. Emotional and physical exhaustion is the primary reason nurses are fleeing the bedside, experts say. It's been a long and brutal 18 months. Zenay Triunfo-Cortez, president of National Nurses United, the biggest nursing union in the nation, told CalMatters, "We thought the pandemic would be over soon and could take time later to deal with our emotions. Then the second surge hit, and the third, and now it's the fourth." Mary Lynn Briggs, an ICU nurse in Bakersfield, said of the dozens of COVID-19 patients she has treated since the pandemic began, only 3 have survived. She says, "Some days coming home from the hospital, I yell at God, I yell at myself, I yell at COVID, and cry, and that's all before I pull into my driveway." Now, California is the only state that caps the number of patients that can be assigned to a single nurse. Under state requirements, an ICU nurse can have no more than 2 patients, and an emergency room nurse no more than 4, for instance. In December, during that winter surge, emergency waivers for the ratios were granted to hospitals throughout the state, allowing ICU nurses to see 3 patients. But critics say the conditions threatened patient safety, and making nurses care for more critically ill patients also increases the pressure and stress on nurses. The state health department did not respond to CalMatters' request asking whether hospitals have applied for new staffing waivers in response to the shortages. Hospital administrators worry that the state's vaccine mandate for healthcare workers, which starts September 30th, could drive some of their workers out. And already, some report resistance among employees. Richardson, the hospital association's attorney, says one hospital told us they had 474 unvaccinated employees. They did a big education and incentive push. Only 12 people signed up. Administrators are especially concerned about low vaccination rates among support staff, like janitors and food service workers. But some nurses also are wary of the COVID-19 vaccine, and some have held protests claiming the vaccine requirement limits their freedom. The vaccine order allows only for narrow religious and medical exemptions, and the State Nursing Association has issued a statement urging all eligible people to be vaccinated. While California was first in the nation to impose a vaccine mandate for healthcare workers, other states have since joined in, although those mandates aren't quite as broad. To contend with local shortages, hospitals are increasingly turning to hiring temporary traveling nurses from around the country. Cole from Scripps Health said the state's testing requirement already has discouraged some out-of-state traveling nurses from taking temporary jobs at California hospitals. But that vaccine mandate is meant to protect vulnerable patients and other staffers at hospitals and their families from contracting COVID-19 from unvaccinated medical workers, posing a real catch-22 for hospitals. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Around 2 dozen students from Cajon Valley Union School District in El Cajon, along with their families, became trapped in Afghanistan after the Taliban takeover, the district announced last week. The families had traveled to Afghanistan over the summer to visit relatives. Most had come to America on special immigrant visas after family members aided U.S. forces in Afghanistan, according to the district. As of our show taping deadline now, the good news is that at least 6 of those 8 families have escaped from Afghanistan with help from the U.S., including Congressman Daryl Issa, and at least 1 has arrived safely in Southern California. Issa's office indicates that his office helped a total of 10 children from Cajon Valley and 20 adult family members out of Afghanistan, but he voiced concern for the fate of others as the Taliban shut down access to the airport, with the August 31st deadline approaching for the U.S. to pull out all remaining troops. Issa issued this statement on August 29th. "Here's my bottom line. There is no way that America can leave our people behind, and we won't stop working until everybody we know of comes home. I continue to have faith that we will do it." In a statement, the school district said it has counseling available to students and families, adding, Cajon Valley Union School District community and staff wait with open arms for the safe return of all our families. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Mitchell Murphy with a health alert. 5 deer mice and 1 brush mouse collected in routine monitoring in the Mount Laguna area have tested positive for the hantavirus. It is not uncommon to find hantavirus in wild rodents in San Diego County. There were 25 detections in 2020 and 42 in 2019, but people are rarely exposed to it. The virus can cause deadly infections in people, and there is no vaccine or cure. County officials remind the public that if you find rodents in your home, garage, sheds, or cabins, you should never sweep up or vacuum up after them, but use wet cleaning methods instead to keep from breathing in the virus and getting sick. If you find rodents' nests or signs of rodent infestation in your home or other structures, use bleach, disinfectants, rubber gloves, and bags to clean up the area.
Advocates say the new UN report waving red flags on climate change is particularly critical for California, where megafires and persistent drought already are becoming the norm. The report also predicts 6 to 12 inches of sea level rise by mid-century. Mary Kreisman with the California League of Conservation Voters says the way forward is to wean our transportation and buildings off of oil and gas and stop using single-use plastics made from petroleum.
We need a government that is going to mandate and regulate corporate polluters, fossil fuel industries, carbon emissions to get to the change we need by 2030. That's the solution.
Nonetheless, this year, California lawmakers have stalled or killed bills to require new buildings to be all electric, hold corporate polluters accountable, and ban new fracking permits. Advocates are gathering signatures for a ballot initiative to limit single-use plastics. Opponents say these measures would burden an economy already hard hit by COVID. Kreisman, however, says we need action like that on a national scale from the Biden administration and Congress, and that will depend on the results of the 2022 midterm election.
The problem is that we don't have the political will and the political power to do it at the rate and scale that science tells us we have to.
California has been a leader on other fronts in the battle against climate change. The state will require that by 2035, all personal cars sold will be zero-emission vehicles, with clean trucks mandated by 2045. The state has set a goal to preserve 30% of lands and water by 2030 and become carbon neutral by 2045. This is Suzanne Potter for California News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with some important news for renters and landlords locally. The County of San Diego's Housing and Community Development Services is rolling out 2 new initiatives aimed at helping landlords and tenants who have struggled financially amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The first program will provide payments to the landlords with rental properties whose tenants are late on rent. The Rental Assistance for Small Landlord program will compensate landlords or property owners for overdue rent payments accumulated since April 2020. Recipients must meet several criteria, including the property has to be located in San Diego County and the owner must be a county resident. The landlord can own no more than 5 rental units. Tenants in eligible units must be at least 3 months past due on their rent. The county will pay benefits directly to the landlord, and applications will be accepted until funding runs out. The application period opens September 1st. The second initiative is aimed at making it easier for San Diego renters to come up with security deposits when moving to a new rental unit. Through the Security Deposit Assistance Program, eligible applicants can receive security deposit assistance limited to 2 months' rent, up to $7,000. To qualify, an applicant must meet certain income limits and sign a 6-month or longer lease for the unit they plan to rent. Landlord participation is a requirement, and payments will be made directly to the property owner. The application period for security deposit assistance opens September 3rd. These programs lessen housing cost burdens and maintain housing stability for low-income renters and landlords who faced financial hardships due to the pandemic. For more information on these programs, you can visit sdhcd.org. That stands for San Diego Housing and Community Development. Again, that's sdhcd.org. Or you can call 858-694-4800. 858-694-4801. Again, 858-694-4801. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. This is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
A hearing on the proposed placement of sexually violent predator Merle Wakefield in Borrego Springs, slated for September, has been canceled after Liberty Healthcare withdrew its request to place him on Yaqui Road. The withdrawal follows strong community opposition to the supervised release of Wakefield in a designated dark skies community with families nearby and very little lighting at night. Supervisor Jim Desmond posted on the Borrego Sun website, "This is a major victory for Borrego Springs and the surrounding areas." Wakefield was convicted of sexual assaults dating back to the 1980s and 90s. The San Diego Sheriff's Department confirms that Superior Court Judge David Gill has granted Liberty Healthcare's request to release the property that had been held as potential placement for Wakefield after Liberty informed the court on August 23rd that it's asking for Wakefield to complete an additional 6 months of treatment as an inpatient at the Department of State Hospitals before he can be released into any community. A new hearing to review the status of a potential placement for Wakefield has been scheduled for February 22nd next year at 9 a.m. in San Diego Superior Court with Judge Gill. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. A suspect accused of striking an 82-year-old man on the head and carjacking his Jeep Cherokee in La Mesa on August 26th was arrested a day later in Irvine on unrelated charges. La Mesa police are working with the Irvine Police Department on the investigation, says Sergeant Matthew Gay with LMPD, to investigate the crimes allegedly committed by 29-year-old Timothy Wallace. A La Mesa police officer conducting a traffic stop at Grossmont Center Drive and Murray Drive heard the 82-year-old man shouting for help and went to his aid. An investigation found the victim had picked up the suspect in El Cajon and given him a ride. The victim became disoriented and the suspect offered to assist him. The two traveled together to La Mesa, where the suspect then reportedly struck the elderly man in the head and forced him out of the vehicle, driving off in his silver Jeep Cherokee. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Mitchell Murphy with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. The County of San Diego's SD Emergency app is now equipped with Shake Ready SD and Earthquake Early Warning System. County Board of Supervisors Chairman Nathan Fletcher says this is an early warning system that has the potential to give users a few seconds warning or a heads up that an earthquake is coming. And that advance warning could make all the difference. It could give you a number of seconds to be able to move your family, your friends, into a safe place and help avoid serious injury. The system relies on a network of over 770 underground sensors and other technologies created in partnership with the U.S. Geological Survey. The Shake Ready SD technology is designed to trigger an alert to your cell phone if you are in a location close enough to an earthquake with a magnitude of 4.5 or greater with a shaking intensity of 3 or greater. Following the alert, the app could provide emergency notifications such as road closures, shelters, or other relevant critical information as needed. And since it is tied to the statewide system of sensors, it will work anywhere in the state to alert people of imminent shaking. Shake Ready SD can save lives and reduce injuries by giving people time to take a protective action like dropping cover and hold on or move away from hazardous areas, says Robert Michael DeGroot with U.S. Geological Survey. For the new feature to work, users who already have the SD Emergency app will need to update it and then configure the settings to allow the app to always track the phone's location so it can accurately alert you if an earthquake with moderate to strong shaking is expected in the area. The app is available in English or Spanish.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, Or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. We'll have some important national news from Public News Service, and then we'll be back with some local news and an interview with author Raina Menashe about her new book, The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Without specifying any future plans, I will say that we will continue to have the ability to defend ourselves and to leverage over-the-horizon capability to conduct counter-terrorism operations as needed.
Saturday, Major General Hank Taylor said a U.S. drone strike had killed two high-profile ISIS-K targets and wounded a third in the first known U.S. military action since Thursday's deadly suicide bombing at the Kabul airport. A second drone strike on Sunday hit a vehicle loaded with explosives that officials said posed an imminent threat to the airport. That strike also set off a separate explosion in the residential neighborhood. CNN quotes a relative as saying nine members of one family were killed by the blast. The network reports that those killed included six children, the youngest being a two-year-old girl. The U.S. Embassy issued a security alert over the weekend stating that Americans should leave the airport area immediately. Also Sunday, President Joe Biden and the First Lady attended the dignified transfer of U.S. service members' remains at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. The Kabul airport attack killed 13 service members from 10 states, including four from California. The blast killed at least 170 people in total. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has requested a major disaster declaration as his state continues to be pummeled by Category 3 Hurricane Ida.
As predicted by the National Weather Service, this is one of the strongest storms to make landfall here in modern times.
Edwards said 5,000 National Guard troops were being staged in 14 parishes for search and rescue efforts with high-water vehicles, boats, and helicopters. 10,000 line workers are on standby to respond to electrical outages. Hundreds of thousands of people are already without power. At the FEMA headquarters in Washington, D.C., FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell said they expect catastrophic impacts from the storm. President Biden said they were praying for the best and preparing for the worst.
As soon as the storm passes, we're going to put the country's full might behind the rescue and recovery.
Voting rights advocates called the passage of federal voting legislation at a March on for Washington and voting rights rally in Washington, D.C. The rally coincided with the 58th anniversary of the March on Washington led by Martin Luther King Jr. Tyleek McMillan of the National Action Network spoke on the National Mall.
And we demand and we require from these streets to those seats that the United States Senate pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, that the United States Senate passes the For the People Act.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eight trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment.
This is Miriam Raftery, host of the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I'm also guest hosting Bookshelf because my guest today is Raina Menashe, our host of Bookshelf. Raina's fiction has been honored by organizations such as the San Diego Writers and Editors Guild, San Diego Book and Writing Awards, and the Southern California Writers Conference. Her first novel, Twice Begun, and her second novel, Silent Bird, were both finalists in the 2012 and 2013 San Diego Book Awards. And her newest novel, a paranormal suspense titled The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake, was released in spring 2021. Her first children's book, The House That Sneezed, will be released early next year. She is currently writing Thrice Begun, the sequel and prequel to Twice Begun. Her website, RainaMenasche.com, includes blogs on psychology and wellness, writing, and other social commentary. Also a licensed clinical social worker, Raina Menasche has taught psychology and counseling at Southern California universities, as well as therapeutic techniques to human service professionals. In addition, she's a workshop leader at the Southern California Writers Conference in San Diego and Irvine. She created a class called Character Therapy, and you're the shrink. I love that. And it's alive to emphasize the joyful creativity of exploring therapeutic exercises with a fictional character. Raina has served as vice president of the Kronos Theater Group, and she often uses dramatic as well as therapeutic techniques in her creative work. And of course, as host of our bookshelf right here on East County Magazine's radio show in San Diego, Raina interviews local authors and sometimes national ones about their creative processes. And you can find more about her at her website, RainaMenasche.com, and that's spelled RainaMenasche.com. Raina, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. It's so much fun to be on my own show.
Yeah, it's different, isn't it, being the interviewee instead of the interviewer.
It feels a little strange.
Yeah. I've got to ask, switching from prior genres, and you're really noted for crossing genres in your books that really defy definition. How difficult was it to switch from psychological romance novels that dealt with some heavy subjects such as addiction and recovering from different traumas into writing paranormal suspense?
Well, in some ways, I see it as consistent because in a way, the suspense book really has a lot to do with trauma and the stories that we tell to comfort ourselves, to soothe ourselves after a trauma, the different paths we choose or don't choose, how we heal or don't heal. I'm always doing this psychological thing, but I put it in a different kind of story. I think I've always wanted to write something scary, scary in the more paranormal sense, and I've been hinting in that direction, and so I decided to just kind of plunge in and do it, and it was very different writing this book.
Well, I've read Spirit of Shy Moon Lake. I enjoyed it, even though it did keep me up all night. It is a page.
Oh, yay.
So you did your job. Yeah. Where did you dream up your ideas for this creative book, Raina, in which people are drawn to this beautiful but perilous Shy Moon Lake and the secrets from the past that it holds?
Well, and it started with an idea. What if you were in a place where your karma, so to speak, what you sow, you know, what you reap, you sow, comes back at you really quickly, where you get what you deserve, or you don't get what you don't deserve, or at least people think that's what happens. And then I sort of, you know, it just meanders off. I mean, this book took about a decade to write. And in that process, it changed quite a bit, but it had a lot to do with what people believe again, what they tell themselves, how we often don't know what's true, what's not true.
Interesting. What was the inspiration for your main character, Jess McCourtney, and for that matter, any of the other key characters that are so compelling in this book, Raina?
Well, you know, sometimes people have always asked me that, especially, well, in my former books as well. And sometimes they think it's me because I often write in the first person.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're all like bits and pieces of me. It's like one big salad or a collage. I think Jess has parts of me for sure. Raising a small boy, the pains, traumas, and incredible joys of motherhood are in there. What it's like to experience betrayal is in there. You know, these are things that everyone experiences, or not everyone, but many people experience. The main character, Charlie McCourtney, her husband, he's a poet. And I think I explored a lot about artists there. Again, what they tell themselves, the stories they tell themselves, how they comfort themselves, how they cope with life's dilemmas and mistakes. Now, the other sort of the residents of the town, I really just had plain romping fun with that. I wanted to make them superstitious, but I wanted to create superstitions and beliefs that don't currently exist. I didn't want to trot on anyone's beliefs or, you know, traditions. I just sort of made up my own. So the whole thing is imagination from beginning to end. But again, why do people believe what they believe?
Who knows? Yeah, fascinating psychological angles in this. So you actually finished writing and marketing the book in the middle of a global pandemic and lockdown. How challenging was that? Or maybe it was the opposite. Maybe you found you had a lot of time on your hands all of a sudden.
Well, I had already written it and I had done most of the editing, final editing, for a long time, actually. And what the pandemic did is when it started, it just kind of took the oomph out of me. I had two book launches, two or three that I canceled because I didn't want to do them virtually. Virtual launchings are fine. It's just that I wanted to read this aloud, you know, live.
So you were saying it just sort of took the oomph out of things. In what ways?
I had all this excited preparation that I had to change. So there were live book launches that I had to cancel. And also, I have to say, I got a little depressed, like lots of people, you know, with the shutdown.
Sure.
And I guess it took a lot of, it took me longer. It took me longer. I just kind of sat on it for several months. So and then it inspired, of course, other books because you're thinking pandemic themes.
Oh my gosh. Now talk about finding the silver lining there.
Right? Yeah, not that anyone wants to hear about a pandemic right now.
Did you try any virtual events?
I did. I've gotten used to it. I think we go kicking and screaming into things that we're not used to. I'm a clinician, as you know, in my day job, and I do those meetings virtually.
As we're doing this interview via Zoom right now.
Exactly. So I think now I would do a virtual book launch, but at the time I was still, you know, I wanted to do things live. Yeah. So it was disappointing in that way, but you do end up saving some money during a pandemic if you're still employed. And so use some of those things to revamp my website. You know, as I said, make lemons out of lemonade if you can.
There you go. Raina, can you read an excerpt for us from The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake?
Sure, I would love to. I'm going to take an excerpt that's fairly early on. It's page 23 in the book. And I'll begin where the little boy Jonah, they just moved to Shy Moon Lake, the family, that's Jess, her husband Charlie, and Jonah. And the little boy Jonah was climbing on the balcony right away the second they got to their new house and almost fell and hurt himself. And so the mother is shaken up. This is the scene right afterwards. Mommy, are you mad at me? No, you just scared me, honey. I'm fine now. Sorry I raised my voice. He thought about that and smiled. Yeah, he would forgive me. Big of him. Then he stood on his tippy toes, peering towards the lake. Who's that? Who's who? He pointed. There, in the water. I squinted at the inky blackness, recalling the town legend about long ago lovers drowning. Sorry, honey, it's too dark. You're just seeing tree shadows. There were indeed tree shadows, thrown by starlight, shifting across the dark water like a flutter of insects. Silhouettes of trees appeared suspended between opposing diadems of light. The Milky Way above and its reflection on the waters of Shy Moon Lake below. How thrilling, I thought, to view a night sky containing more than six or seven stars. Against this luminous, scintillating dome, anything seemed possible. Like, I wondered, what would happen to all this beauty if there was an earthquake? Violent quakes had no doubt accompanied the birth of the volcano that now cupped the lake. How many points on the Richter scale could these cottages endure before windows shattered, porches toppled, the land crumbling beneath our feet? Maybe we will need to climb inside that refrigerator. Mrs. Paddock said, Mrs. McCourtney, are you all right? I shook off the unwanted gloom. I might not be as congenitally cheerful as my husband, but I was not usually like this either. Yes, thank you. I'm fine. I'm just tired. It's been a long day. As Charlie rose back up the steps, the upper half of his body hidden behind boxes and bags, a door slammed. A porch light flicked on in the cottage next door. We looked over. A woman with short, darkish hair gazed back at us, her expression flash frozen. Good evening, I called, waving, happy for the distraction. We're moving in. She did not reply, just stared. She had to have heard me. The cottages were not that far apart. I stepped to the end of the porch. My name is Jess. This is my husband, Charlie, and our son, Jonah. We've bought this place and we're moving in right now. Still no response from the lady next door. Was she ill? Disabled? Finally, as if set to a delayed timer, her eyebrows went down and a smile opened up nice and big. Well, hello. Welcome.
What a marvelous and somewhat chilling piece of foreshadowing that is.
Thank you.
Love it. I've got to ask you about your class, Character Therapy and You're the Shrink, emphasizing, as we've noted, the joyful creativity of exploring therapeutic exercises with a fictional character. Can you tell us a little bit more about that for people who may be interested?
Yes, this class is really, it's really personal. It's like an art project for me. When I was little, I couldn't decide between being a writer and being, say, a psychologist. So basically, I kept going back and forth between the two of them. This class is really putting it all together. I take all these psychological theories that I learned in my master's degree in my profession and look at a character from all these theories, the child development theories. Where did your character get stuck in developmental tasks that causes current behavior? Or looking at defense mechanisms and thought distortions and sort of really looking into these explanations that we've developed to understand your character better if you choose to. Now, do I do that with my characters? I think I do it more on an informal level, but I also hand out to the people who attend the class, I hand out lots of worksheets so that they can revisit these theories and play with them. Play with your characters. Have fun. This is the sandbox.
Very wise advice. The characters are really what drives a novel, I think, even more than plot. So that begs the question of what are you working on next?
Well, Twice Begun, which was my first novel, has to do about with sort of reinventing yourself after, you know, a huge betrayal, and how sometimes the people that we think are better people don't turn out to be as good as people who have been through very hard times and have risen above.
Yeah.
There is a house in that book, it's her great aunt's house in Coronado, that was a home for hysterical women during World War II. And a lot of readers said, man, I wanted to learn more about that house. And when are you going to write the sequel to the book? I want to know what happens to this former social worker who gets involved with a person who's a recovering addict or former client, which is taboo. Anyway, so yeah. I decided to write this sequel and prequel. Ah. So it goes into the great aunt's youth in this house, as well as, so that's called Thrice Begun. I'm about, you know, halfway, maybe three quarters of the way through that. And then there's a children's story called The House That Sneezed that is really four drawings. I'm not doing the drawings, but it's very near completion. So that one also has psychological themes, basically to help little kids deal with grief by using a metaphor of the house that's not feeling well.
And very timely right now with a pandemic that's killed 700,000 Americans as we speak.
If I could say that that book was inspired by when I worked with little kids and families, and I was looking for that book to use with the children that I worked with, and I couldn't find it. So I finally said, okay, well, let's create it.
So it's really filling an important need. Well, Raina, you're just so versatile, and I want to thank you today. We are out of time, but I want to thank you for coming on the show today and sharing all of your marvelous literary knowledge with us. Readers, you can find more about Raina Menashe and her books at rainamenashe.com, and that's spelled RainaMenashe.com.
It was a pleasure, Miriam. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. You've been listening to the Bookshelf segment on East County Magazine's radio show on KNSJ, bringing you news about local literary luminaries and some great books to read. Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with Destination East County. This week's destination features a concert by Fred Benedetti and Julian and the Holy Smokes Barbecue in Descanso. Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including our very own Party in Paradise and Community Champion Awards with East County Magazine on September 25th in Jamul at the Jamul Casino, the Monkeys Farewell Concert in El Cajon, Laurel and Hardy Comedy in Spring Valley, and the Borrego Days Desert Festival, as well as outdoor concerts and car shows, plus movies and county parks all summer long. Friends of the Julian Library continue their Music on the Mountain concert series with guitarist Fred Benedetti. Born in Japan, Benedetti began playing guitar at age 9 and is now chair of guitar studies and associate professor of music at Grossmont College. The concert will be on Friday, September 3rd at 3 p.m. in the Julian Library. On Sunday, September 5th, Our Lady of Light Catholic Parish in Descanso invites you to their 84th annual Deep Pit Barbecue, called the Holy Smokes Barbecue. It includes deep pit barbecued beef with all the fixings, as well as ice cream and cobbler desserts. Beer and soda are also available. Bring your dancing boots or shoes, because the Whiskey Ridge Band will provide music. There are also crafts and games for kids, raffles, and vendors. For more information, you can visit OurLadyOfLight.church. East County Magazine invites you to don your tropical attire and join us at our Party in Paradise on Saturday evening, September 25th, where we will also present Community Champions Awards to honor outstanding community members. The event will be held atop the new rooftop deck in the Jamul Casino, with panoramic 360-degree views, shade, and a dance floor. Guests can enjoy a cocktail party, tropical dinner, live music by Slack Key Ohana, raffle, and silent auction. All proceeds benefit East County Media, supporting East County Magazine, our radio show, East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts, and our Community Champions Awards. To protect the safety of guests, proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test is required. Tickets are available at eastcountymagazine.org. Early bird rates are available through the end of August for the September 25th event, and the deadline to RSVP is 2 weeks in advance. The Monkees will be live in concert on September 18th at the Magnolia Performing Arts Center in El Cajon. The performance is their farewell tour. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band still includes two of its original members, Mickey DeLenz and Michael Nesmith. Their hit songs include I'm a Believer and many more. Tickets are available at MagnoliaSanDiego.com. SAPS at Sea, the San Diego chapter of the Sons of the Desert, the official Laurel and Hardy Appreciation Society, has resumed meetings, with the next one slated for September 18th at 7 p.m. at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Spring Valley. The evening kicks off with Me and My Pal, a 1933 film in which Ollie is getting married. September's guest comedians are the Little Rascals in one of their most popular shorts, School's Out. After intermission, more laughs are in store with A Chump at Oxford and the cartoon Blackboard Jumble in honor of back-to-school season. For more info, you can visit the Saps at Sea Facebook page. The 55th Annual Borrego Days Desert Festival will take place October 23rd and 24th at Christmas Circle Community Park on Palm Canyon Drive in Borrego Springs. Hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday and 10 to 3 on Sunday. The festive weekend includes a flyover, parade, live entertainment, dance floor, art exhibits, kids' zone, food vendors, adult beer garden, car show, amateur talent show, and more. This year's theme is Welcome Back, according to the event's sponsor, the Borrego Springs Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau. For more information on Borrego Days, you can visit borregodays.com. El Cajon's Dinner in a Concert Summer Series continues every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. now through October. The concerts are in Prescott Promenade Park on Main Street in downtown El Cajon. You can bring a picnic or come early to dine at one of the restaurants nearby. In addition, El Cajon's Classic Car Nights are back every Wednesday evening at Prescott Promenade all summer long. You can find a full list of concert performers and car show themes at downtownelcajon.com. San Diego's Summer Movies in the Park are back with options for live viewings in parks across San Diego County, as well as options for viewings from cars at some locations and several online showings as well. You can get a full list of the movies at summermoviesinthepark.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
In January, student loan borrowers will have to start paying off their loans again as the pandemic-related pause on payment is set to expire. Now, a new report looks at ways to fix problems in the student loan system. Report co-author Michelle Domino says the repayment programs are far too complex, especially for teachers, health workers, and social workers who apply for the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program.
Right now, only about 1% of applicants who are submitting for public service loan forgiveness are actually seeing those applications approved.
The report also found that the income-driven repayment plan is reaching far too few people, and many borrowers become discouraged when their payments only cover the interest and not the principal on their loan. In the U.S., 45 million borrowers are struggling under $1.6 trillion in student loan debt. Domino says now is the time to consider proposals to cap interest on student loans, to limit interest to the amount required to service the loan, or to transition to upfront one-time fees instead of charging interest.
It's an opportunity in the lead-up to the lifting of the repayment freeze to really think about whether there are alternatives to interest, lower interest rates, grace periods with interest, or other policies that could help to ensure that borrowers are actually paying down the principal that they've taken on.
Starting in October, the U.S. Department of Education's new Committee on Student Loan Reform will tackle these issues in a monthly series of meetings. The hearings will be open to the public via live stream. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. This is Suzanne Potter for California News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators for transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine Radio Show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617. Or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.